I'm joined on it now by Fingal County Councillor and Director of Hibernia Forum to discuss, as we were saying just at the top of the programme there, to discuss the fact that Ireland could leave the EU. Keith Redmond, good morning.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Very, very good indeed. So what is your thinking behind this then? I mean, and what time frame are you predicting that Ireland could be the next out of the EU?
Well, I don't know if it'll be the next out of the EU. I think there's a bigger threat there with Italy, actually. We can go into that if you want to. But when it comes to Ireland, the situation at the moment is where we all recognise that the European Union was very beneficial for Ireland. I mean, in the early days when it was the common market and the EEC, certainly Ireland saw an awful lot of benefits from the inflow of money from Europe. We built roads and all the rest of it. But things are changing now. And we're now hearing more and more about the so-called project. So this is the political union of Europe. And I really don't think that Irish people want a political union, despite the fact that all of our political parties, including Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Sinn Féin, Labour, are all in favour of the European project. So I really don't think people are with the political class on this. And I think if there's a referendum, which there has to be as a result of our constitution, which the Europeans hate, I think that Ireland will reject the notion of a political union. We did when the constitution was put to us, and indeed the Dutch and the French did the same. But the Europhiles in Brussels don't seem to listen to the people too often.
Well, the politicians that you mentioned, the political groupings that you mentioned, that's their stance right now. But I don't think really we've started the conversation about where we see ourselves in the future. You talk about what Ireland has benefited from, and no one could doubt that. But, you know, you go to this part of the world where people can't even fish in the water that their fathers and grandfathers fished in. You know, farmers feeling they're not getting a decent deal. Now, what I'm trying to say is that, you know, political parties have a tendency to change their opinions when the conversation starts and they start finding out what the public actually think.
Well, you see, the problem, Greg, is that they deliberately do not want a conversation on Europe because they know that the people don't support the notion of this political project, the political union of Europe. They know that. The political class in Ireland know that they don't have the people with them, so they deliberately don't talk about it. So you never hear about it in a general election campaign. You never hear about it in any discourse on the radio whatsoever because they're all in agreement on this. There's a political consensus on this. There's a nod and a wink aspect to this in our political class. You don't talk about it and we won't talk about it and then the people won't talk about it. But there's one amazing thing about us in comparison with every other European country. We have mandatory referendums built into our constitution when any sacrifice of sovereignty occurs. And as I say, the Europeans hate it because we are the people who are generally sticking our fingers in the wheels of their so-called progress. So I think that, you know, the conversation is going to happen. It's going to start to happen now because of Brexit, the impact on the border. The fact that you mentioned there, the fishing rights around Donegal. We have exactly the same thing here in Howth. Howth was formerly a massive fishing town and now decimated. I mean, we're basically a tourist town now, which is fantastic, but at the same time, the fishing industry has been destroyed. And there is an awful lot of resentment out there, not only amongst fishing communities, agriculture communities you mentioned, the fact that they're now living on effectively a handout from Europe. The cap grant that comes every quarter keeps farmers going because they're restricted by quotas and they're restricted by anti-competitive practices. Our farmers could compete with the best in the world. If you just look at New Zealand, similar population of the farmers and the productivity they have there. So our farmers shouldn't be afraid at all about being liberated from Europe.
You talk about us being shafted and we talk about the banking crisis and how, you know, we all end up and still and our grandchildren will probably end up paying for the way we had to. We were almost told to or were told to by the EU to deal with it. Are our memories that long, though, now that the people are in some areas of the country, at least are seeing a few euro in their pocket, perhaps mood would soften to the banking crisis and the EU's role in how we had to deal with it?
Well, you're right. I mean, the EU effectively quarantined their toxic European banking debt on our island. They effectively said, right, if we just leave it on that island, it can't get to the mainland and therefore our banking system can continue. So we had to pick up the tab of 60 billion euro of bondholders' losses, gamblers, who we had absolutely no guarantee to, and yet we have to take them on because the European Central Bank told us to. That happened because we gave away our monetary sovereignty. In other words, we gave away the ability to print our currency, we gave away the ability to set our interest rates, and we gave that to the European Central Bank. That is a lesson in not giving up sovereignty. And if ever there was a lesson for us, that is the lesson. But you're right, unfortunately, we've got a very short memory in Ireland. We tend to vote back in parties who destroy countries. We tend to vote back in politicians who've been proven to be corrupt. We have a very short memory.
Well, when you see that Fianna Fáil now are right back up there in terms of popularity, and they were the party, of course, that, you know, were in power at this time. So that's how short the memories are.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about it is, you know, Ireland has a kind of a storied kind of, or starry-eyed rather, kind of notion of what, you know, our history is, whether you're a Fianna Fáil family or a Fine Gael family, and there's that loyalty built in. And the loyalty seems to get to the point where we're willing to forgive them anything and everything. You know, we say, well, that was the previous generation's politicians, and this generation, the party, we're back to being loyal to the party again and all this stuff. It's the same ideology in all of those parties, and the basically the ideology is keep the show on the road, stay in the middle of the road, don't offend anybody in Brussels for fear that they'll stop the money coming our way and we can't buy votes with it.
Now, so, talking about the future of the EU, you know, as you mentioned, there are rumblings in other countries that perhaps, you know, could look for an exit before us, as you mentioned. How realistic do you think that is? Because and how do you think it will affect the UK's deal that they get with Europe? The UK, Britain does have to be made a massive example of here, do they not? I'm not asking you, by the way, to argue for the future of the EU, but obviously you're well informed on the matter, you know?
Well, my feeling on it is that, you know, there were some rumblings that, okay, that the elections that are occurring in Europe at the moment may throw up the possibility of a similar referendum occurring in another country. So the first one was Holland. Geert Wilders was the anti-EU candidate there. He lost. Then we have the French election coming up. Marine Le Pen. She will probably get through to the second round of the election, but she'll lose by, according to the polls, she'll lose. Now, we can't believe polls these days, but at the same time, she does look like she's going to lose. But the one that's really standout and is definitely terrifying them in Brussels is Italy. Italy is going to face an election in the next 6 to 12 months. And as a result, the Five Star Movement, which is a kind of a populist movement there, is leading in the polls. And also our old friend Mr. Berlusconi is back. And both of those parties are advocating for a withdrawal from the euro, the currency. So they're saying that they want to have a referendum on the withdrawal from the euro. Five Star Movements are definitely Eurosceptic as well, but they're not advocating Italy dropping out of the European Union, but they are the euro. Now, if that happens, if the European Union was to lose the third biggest economy from the euro, I think really it's, you know, good night.
The foundations
Irene
are going, aren't they, then? That's where things start.
It's good night, Irene, for the euro, for sure. I think that's the one that's terrifying them the most. When it comes to Brexit, the interesting thing is, I don't know if you've heard, but the debating kind of policies, the guidelines have come out from the European Union, and one of them is that Spain has managed to insert a veto into these guidelines, which basically means that if Britain doesn't give them a deal on Gibraltar, they have the right to veto the Brexit deal. Now, this is very important, not only because that's a long-standing territorial issue, but also because Ireland doesn't seem to have managed to slip anything in there about our own border.
Yeah, but we've been too busy talking about everything else, it seems. Well, I mean, Brexit was like, well, we don't know what's going to happen. I mean, it's clear
well,
then...
We knew for a fact that the border was a major, major issue.
Yeah.
And yet the Spanish were clever enough to insert a veto into the negotiations.
But we weren't taking a lead on the border, you see. We were sort of looking for reassurances from Europe, whereas the Spanish, as you mentioned, they were proactive, whereas we're saying, please, you know, this is what we need, look after us, you know what I mean? Whereas it seems...
We are always the people who go cap in hand to Europe. We are always the people who doffing the cap and being deferential to Europe. That has been proven time and time again. We have the best behaved boys in the class when it comes to the lads who go across to Brussels. But I think, you know, it's important for us to realise that there is no automatic veto for each country in the Brexit negotiation. It's what they call qualified majority voting. In other words, the European Council, the leaders of all the countries get together and they have basically an up and down vote. So it effectively means if more than half vote for it, it goes through. So Ireland can jump up and down all they want on the day, but if there's a hard border across Ireland, the Irish government could do nothing to veto the Brexit deal.
But there's no way around having a hard border unless we were to police.
Well, there is.
Is there? Unless we're policing the UK border at Irish ports, how else can you stop people moving freely into Northern Ireland? You don't want an inverted commas. How could it be done?
Okay. I don't think there's going to be a hard border. I think here's how. We've never been part of the Schengen Agreement, the free movement within Europe. Ireland and the UK have had their own common travel area since 1922. So for 50 years before we joined the EU, we had our own common travel area. We never joined the Schengen area. So we always, if you remember, if anybody goes on holiday, if you go to Spain, you go to France, you've got to bring your passport. So we're entering the Schengen area by bringing our passport. So nothing's going to change in that regard. I think the common travel area will continue. The complications arise where if a European national flies into Dublin Airport, the question then is, well, what stops them, you know, getting on the M1 and going up to Belfast? Well, the thing is that, okay, you can go up to Belfast. The difference will be you will have no right to work in the UK. You'll have no right to housing in the UK.
Yeah, but it's getting into the UK.
If they go into the UK, what exactly can you do? I mean, once you're found, you're just deported. Yeah. And the agreement, I'd imagine, would be deported back
and
to Dublin.
And it's worth noting that the majority, I think at least of late, of those going into the UK are from outside Europe. So,
yeah, well, about half. But the point is that even if they did want to introduce... even if they didn't have a border, they can still police the migration in because there's nothing that people can do when they get there. There will be an agreement, I imagine, that Ireland would be the first port to deport to. So you just keep getting sent back down the M1 to Dublin. So I really don't think that that's an issue. The other thing then is the customs union. That's the major issue, really. But at the same time, we in Ireland and the UK had different customs arrangements, different customs tariffs, all before the time we joined the European Union. We have different VAT rates right now. So there's always a clever way of doing that, and that can be done invisibly through business transactions.
Okay.
So I'm not really too worried about that.
Okay, interesting conversation. And as the story develops, hopefully we'll touch base again. Thanks very much for that.